This hour of the Jason Rant Show is brought to you by PRMI, Primary Residential Mortgage. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in the media?
This week we saw the first hearing around the commission set up to investigate, and we put that in air quotes, the January 6th riot. I have been consistent in all of my commentary on January 6th and the year's worth of Antifa and BLM violence. It should all be condemned. All of the instances that Antifa thugs and BLM radicals burning down buildings, torching cars, looting, trying to murder cops has to be condemned strongly and unequivocally. I also believe the violence that we saw on January 6th needs to be condemned unequivocally, clearly, boldly. And so I've done just that. The difference is I am consistent. You guys maybe are consistent, but a lot of folks in the media are not. CNN is chief among them. CNN spent the entirety of all the riots over the Summer of Love doing one of three things. Number one, they sometimes just ignored it. There were voices there who completely ignored all of the rioting, pretending it didn't exist. You have people there pretending it didn't exist. And then you had people justifying it. I mean, they're Antifa. That means they're anti-fascist. Of course we're going to support them. They're like our American troops landing on Normandy. You had three different angles depending on which show you would be watching or reading about, because none of us actually watch CNN. It's awful. And now they have the audacity to pretend otherwise. So Officer Harry Dunn was on with Don Lemon last night on CNN. Harry Dunn was one of the officers, one of the four that I believe are being used as pawns by the Democratic Party as they do this commission on January 6th. But Harry Dunn was one of the victims on January 6th. And all of us who support the police, who back the blue, we should acknowledge that, even though he's being used, I think, maybe willingly, for political purposes to try to pretend that January 6th is the only violence that matters and is indicative of the true national security threat of Trump supporters. He still is a cop, and he still was injured, as were so many others, by groups of people who otherwise claim to support police. But he was on last night, and he made a point that on CNN doesn't get made, which was all riots are wrong.
First Amendment protests is what this country is about. First Amendment, the Constitution, like, that's the democracy of it. But once you start attacking people, attacking things, then that's wrong. And that, and you know what? That goes to the riots this summer. They were wrong. If you peacefully protest, then sure.
They should have cut to Don Lemon's face at that point so he could say, what riot, huh? Like that look of riots? What are these riots you speak of?
But the riots and the violence and the damage this summer, they were wrong. They were wrong. And that's the exact same thing that happened at the Capitol. But their goal was to overthrow democracy, which is a bigger threat to America.
So here's my disagreement, strong disagreement. Number one, I'm not going to pretend that democracy was threatened that day in any meaningful way. It's despicable what happened. The people who broke the law should go to jail. Full stop. But I'm not going to pretend that a group of unarmed people, some of whom were dressed in costumes, posed a direct threat to democracy. There were folks there who were incredibly violent. They posed a threat, but not to democracy. I'm not going to play into that nonsense. But for a moment, let's go with it and assume that that is true. Okay? Certainly there were messages from some of them who indicated that's what they wanted to do. He is pretending that the Antifa violence and the BLM violence wasn't trying to do the exact same thing. Turn directly to Seattle, the insurrection. You had an armed group of Antifa thugs and BLM radicals not only commandeering a police precinct, but taking over six city blocks. They did that because they wanted to have the government pursue policies that they support. That is a threat to democracy. Taking over six city blocks of a major metropolitan city armed with the intent of changing policy. That's not democracy. That's not democracy at all. And then they, of course, set up an autonomous zone, free from all of the laws. They'll come up with their own. And if you don't like it, you could leave. That's not democracy. That is a threat to democracy. That is an actual threat. So we should at least acknowledge that.
I'm not a street cop. I'm not going to pretend to be. The officers in Portland, in Minnesota, in Seattle, and across the country that went through hell, my heart goes out to them. They didn't deserve any of the stuff that they went through. And a lot of people want to say, well, what about those guys? They are freaking heroes, too.
First time those words uttered on CNN. Hosts don't take that position because they don't believe it. Hosts on CNN and guests on CNN downplayed or supported the violence. But they're pretending, Don Lemon at least, is pretending that Harry Dunn here is saying a truth that they believe. But they don't. And of course, they'll use this interview to pretend that this is what they've been doing this entire time, which is talking equally and honestly about everything. I mean, sure, when there is a burning building behind me, I'll still say everything is all good. But we talked about it.
They deserve credit. They deserve honor. They deserve respect. Every single cop this summer that was met against Antifa and the vicious rioters this summer.
I was told Antifa was a myth. CNN believes Antifa doesn't exist. Or sometimes it does exist in their freedom fighters, but oftentimes they don't exist.
They absolutely deserve the credit and respect those officers do. They don't deserve it. Just like on January 6th, it seems like it can't be this and this. It has to be this or that.
Mm-hmm.
It's both of them. Why can't both things exist?
They do both exist. So why doesn't Don Lemon answer that question? In fact, he doesn't answer that question. He deflects. He doesn't answer why it can't be both. Because he does not believe it can be both. Don Lemon was one of the people who mixed in his coverage of ignoring what was going on, downplaying or justifying.
We can deal with many things in this country at the same time. And if something happens, it doesn't mean that you go, oh, well, what about this? What about that? Can't we focus on what happened on January 6th?
Okay. Why can't you, Don, focus on what happened in Seattle and Portland and Minneapolis and New York and Los Angeles and Austin and Richmond? Why can't you focus at the time on any of that? You know, this whole idea, and it's the mantra behind Black Lives Matter. It goes, yes, all lives matter, but Black Lives Matter right now, because this is the issue we want to bring attention to. Well, you don't get to decide what issues deserve attention. The American people get to decide, and you decided to ignore them. And now pretend that, oh, no, we talked about it then. Right now we want to talk about this because this is the issue. Tell that to the Seattle officers who were inside the East Precinct while thugs were using quick dry cement to seal shut the door to the precinct while another loser tried to burn the building down. Was that not on that day, on that night, in that week? Was that not something that was important to talk about at the time? It was prior to January 6th. But they said nothing. They said nothing. They did nothing. They did not care.
Our democracy was in jeopardy.
We should be.
This weren't just people who were exercising. Some of them were exercising their right to protest.
Mm-hmm.
Others went way too far. That's a different story than trying to undermine democracy and stop an election.
Oh, okay. Stop an election. This happened after the election. You mean certification? So good at stopping the certification, they delayed it a couple hours. Harry Dunn is right that you can talk about both, and we all should be talking about both. And to be clear, there's some folks on the right who don't want to talk about what happened on January 6th. There's a difference between downplaying or overplaying and having just honest conversations about what happened on January 6th. But there were a lot of instances over the course of months and months and months, and far more deaths associated with the BLM rioting and the Antifa thuggery. Don Lemon doesn't want to talk about it. He just wants to gaslight you into thinking that he talked about it. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. If you text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my social media channels where you can watch my weekly update video brought to you by the Novak team, powered by Keller Williams. You can visit them online at meetthenovaks.com. Every Thursday, I do a video for the Jason Rand Show. It's all produced up. Looks really, really good. Today, we talk about the fake hate crime out in Burien, where the mayor claims to have been a white supremacist hate crime victim. He was not. And I take you through all the evidence with photos on the Jason Rand Show video update. Text RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Or head on over to any of my social media channels and you'll get the link.
What's trending in the classroom?
I have nothing against teachers. I have a lot against teachers' unions because I don't think they act in the best interest of the people that the workers are supposed to be there to serve, which are the kids. I don't believe that teachers' unions are as necessary as they want you to think they are, because it's not like folks are attacking the industry of teaching. Teachers are all seen as heroes, all of them. And unlike, for example, police, this is a profession that is not defined by their worst, by the small handful of the ones who should not be teachers. They only do that on the left for police. All cops are Derek Chauvin. You know what? It's not a few bad apples. The roots are rotten. They don't say that for teachers. But I know that a lot of parents started to get woke. Woke in a way that makes sense. Not woke in the way the left wants you to be woke, but woke in knowing what some teachers are putting in front of your kids and they're trying to hide it from you, sometimes literally telling kids, don't share this info with your parents. And they took advantage of all of the goodwill that was developed over the last several decades. You understandably trust, respect teachers. You know how hard it is dealing with your kid, just your kid, as a parent. Think about the job that a teacher has to do with not just your kid, but 30 to 40 others in a classroom setting, trying not only to teach them, but getting them to behave. And of course, naturally, understandably, rightly, that earned your admiration. And the teachers' union knows that. They knew that last year. So they took advantage of the pandemic. They took advantage of your goodwill. And they used it to get billions of dollars. Only now to say, to imply, they might not actually go back to work. Those are the words of Randy Weingarten, or the message of Randy Weingarten. She's the president of the American Federation of Teachers. She did an interview on MSNBC, and they were talking about reopening the schools. In the context that we got the Delta variant, pretending that we're never going to have any other variants, this is just some special unique one. Doesn't appear to be. But because of the Delta variant and because of the new recommendations coming from the CDC, well, all of a sudden, Randy Weingarten isn't committing to reopening schools.
Has really thrown this curveball that says that while vaccination is the number one gold standard, that we need to, you know, bring back our masks for schools. So the bottom line is we're going to keep kids safe. We're going to keep our members safe. And we're going to try to open up schools, and we're going to try to move through this political battlefield.
You're going to try to reopen schools? You're going to try. That means you might not reopen schools despite getting everything that you asked for and more. Behind the scenes, of course, the CDC had been taking talking points and requests from the teachers' union, indicating that their decisions aren't, in fact, based on science and data alone. And now, despite getting everything they wanted, the teachers' union is signaling they might not open. Huh. But what will happen if she were to get her way is that the schools that she doesn't exert influence over, that the teachers' unions don't exert influence over, they will be opened, and kids who go to those schools will be better positioned after graduation. They'll be smarter citizens, and they'll be better likely to get a job than the others. What kind of schools are we talking about? Private ones. Private schools barely shut down. Do you remember seeing any stories about the outbreaks from the private schools? Despite the fact that even at the time that the media narrative was that the schools would become super spreaders. Do you recall any of those stories? I'm assuming that some schools had to temporarily shut down because of an outbreak. That's my assumption. Whether or not it was warranted doesn't matter. My assumption is that of all the private schools, maybe. But do you remember any story? I can't remember a single story locally or nationally, really. Kids are not at risk of COVID. Not your average kid. Now, if your kid has an immunocompromised system, a severe underlying health condition, different. But that's not even close to representing a statistically meaningful demographic of kids. Kids don't get harmed by COVID, according to all of the data. 0% of the deaths are associated with kids. And I believe it was Dr. Marty McCary from Johns Hopkins, who pointed out, looking at the data, that the kids who have died of COVID, and I believe it's in the 250s-ish range, they had underlying health conditions. More kids last year died from the flu than they did from COVID. For whatever reason, and there have been a lot of speculation, COVID does not impact kids the same way it can adults, and does adults. So why exactly would we not reopen schools? You're already forcing them to wear masks, which is ridiculous. The teachers, the teachers are vaccinated, so they're not really at risk. We all know that that's nonsense because the teachers' unions fought to keep teachers from being mandated into getting the vaccine. Now, some of the unions lost that battle, some of them won. But if you, as an adult, is concerned that a kid is going to give you COVID, well, adult, you could always get the vaccine, right? You can choose to get vaccinated. What's stopping you? You're telling everybody else to get vaccinated. You're telling us we'll reopen the schools when people are vaccinated. You're telling folks, as soon as the teachers all have access, we're all in. Well, you've had access for months now. You'll have access for even more weeks going into the new school season or semester. So what exactly is the issue? I hope parents are paying attention. I pray you're paying attention. I really do. I hope you realize what's going on, how you're getting taken advantage of. And I hope you stop your unyielding support and loyalty to a group of folks, to at least the unions and the leadership in unions, that don't reciprocate that loyalty. Your kids are suffering when they're out of school. Intellectually, academically, we know that they're struggling. Emotionally, we know that they're struggling. Physically, we know that they're struggling. You see it as a parent. You see it in the eyes of your kids, whether you live in Seattle or Tumwater, Gig Harbor, Port Orchard, Bellevue, wherever. You have the same situation with your kid. You see them waking up without that spark. You see a drop in energy. You see them not retaining the information from the remote learning environment. And you see the data that shows they are not at risk. Not from COVID. And now you have a teachers union president who won't unequivocally say we're going to open this next semester because of a quote-unquote curveball. They're always going to use the curveball excuse. The curveball will never not exist. We will always have variants. Always. They're setting it up so they can get out of work on a dime, all while taking more of yours. I think that's despicable. You should too. So stop giving them all of your loyalty. They're not loyal to you. They haven't earned it now. They haven't earned it. Now, they have to earn your loyalty. You have to be convinced that they care about you and your kid. Stop accepting this. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message.
Yelm, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle, and instead we focus all of our attention on you, the communities you live in and care about most. Media is already hyper-focused on Seattle. We don't need to be. And we start in Chelan County because it ties to a bigger picture issue we've been talking about on the show for the last several months. The attack on policing, the reimagining of policing, because what you have are lawmakers, Democrats in Olympia, who decided to pass a whole bunch of laws ignoring the concerns of police to fundamentally change policing. And it's already having an effect. It's having the exact effect everyone knew it would have. Now, last hour, we talked to you about the situation in Puyallup. Now we take it to Chelan County because their sheriff's office say a man in a yellow dress who had just been released from Western State Hospital, he stole a school bus. And then he took that school bus, abandoned it somewhere, and then ended up picking up a piece of heavy equipment to drive through the home of his estranged wife. And what happened here ties into the new Washington state laws because, according to Cairo 7, they say this event, which happened on Saturday, employees at Osprey Rafting said they saw this dude in the yellow dress driving away in their yellow school bus. This started in Leavenworth, and he was driving down State Route 2, the worst state route in the state, at least as it goes through Salton. And Chelan County Sheriff's deputies responded. They found the bus heading eastbound. Deputies said the driver ran a red light. They tried to pull him over, but the bus didn't stop. Now, they can't just force him to stop because he drove through a red light because of the new rules governing chases. But it gets worse. Because after the bus traveled through Wenatchee, traveled across the Senator George Seller Bridge, Douglas County deputies then followed that bus because it changed jurisdictions. They tried to make a traffic stop, but the driver didn't pull over, and so deputies had to stop following. Because in this case, they wouldn't be allowed to pursue the bus because they didn't have probable cause. Law enforcement are not allowed to go on police chases, pursue vehicles, unless four elements are met. Number one, probable cause for a violent offense, sex offense, or escape from, like, detention facility, escape from custody, or reasonable suspicion for DUI. Probable cause is a high bar. Reasonable suspicion is a lower bar. Pursuit has to be necessary to identify or apprehend the person. And the driver has to pose an imminent threat to the safety of others. And the risk of failing to apprehend or identify that person is a greater risk than the risk of vehicle pursuit. And a supervisor has to offer authorization. None of that existed here. None of it existed. In fact, once you got in to Douglas County, well, guess what? What's the probable cause to stop him even from running that red light if you think you would be able to claim that that was a violent offense, which it's not, and you checked off the box for everything else? So they had to let him go. They had to let him go. Otherwise, if they were to pull him over, go on to a chase, and then use force to arrest him, those officers, those deputies, could have lost their certification to be a police officer. So they let him go. A few hours later, out in Stevens County, he was caught and arrested. Not for anything having to do with the bus theft, But police said he stole a front-end loader, drove it through the home of his estranged wife, who thankfully had fled earlier when she learned that he was nearby. She had the right instincts there. Police said the suspect flipped a vehicle onto the building. His identity was verified by Chelan County deputies. He was wearing the same yellow dress as when he was seen stealing the school bus. His name is Andrew Loudon, or Luden. He was arrested a day earlier, or excuse me, not even a full, earlier that day in Lakewood from Western State Hospital. And this is where he allegedly committed these crimes. Right now, he's being held on charges of theft of a motor vehicle, possession of a stolen vehicle, first-degree malicious mischief, a domestic violence call, and attempting to elude a police vehicle. Now, this story didn't have to end the way that it ended, but it did because of the rules. So I guess really it did have to end the way that it ended. Isn't that a shame? You have to start wondering whether or not people are going to wake up in this state to what's going on with policing. Tomorrow, I'll be on with America's Newsroom talking about these very issues. Be talking about this very issue. The reimagining of police. I think that is going to be a much bigger problem than folks seem to realize. Kind of like gang violence. One of those things we just don't talk about. Now, can I prove what happened in Renton was gang violence? No. But let's go through some of these details where six teenagers right now are on the run after stealing a woman's car and then crashing it down the street moments later. This is a story from Como TV. The victim said she was cleaning out her garage. She was at home. Happened around 7 p.m. or so when she saw these six teenagers walking by. She didn't think anything of it. They seemed fine, I guess. They were wearing masks because they were in a group, so she didn't really think anything of it. It's COVID, right? But things obviously changed. She gets into her car when one of the teens grabs her arm, threatens her with a gun, forcing her out of the car as she tried to talk him down. But then another one of the teenagers came up with another gun and threatened her again. So she got out of her car. The four teen suspects jumped in and they sped off. They crashed about 2 miles away. Now, officers said they searched for all the suspects using their helicopter, a canine, drones, but none were found. Two suspects who used a gun, they believe are about 14 to 16 years old. Is it possible? And just go with me for a moment, because I know we're not supposed to talk about gang violence for some reason. Is it possible that those are gang members, or at least kids who might be going down the wrong path? And when you've got guns and you're pulling them out on innocent women to steal their car, most likely this is not the first time they committed any acts of violence. Most likely, this is not a group of kids who have probably strong father figures in their life. That's what the data would suggest. And understand that these are the types of kids, despite using weapons, would get a pass from the courts over and over and over again. We'll give them restorative justice. Let's give them art therapy. That'll work. Do you think these are the kinds of kids, based on this story, who need art therapy or maybe a little bit something more serious? I'm all in on the restorative justice if all they did was steal a pack of cigarettes or something, or beer from a 7-Eleven or a Bartels or whatever. That's someone who can be saved and isn't a direct threat right now, but when you're pulling out a gun, you're a direct threat. You can do the restorative justice in juvie. I don't need them thrown in jail for the rest of their lives, but there do need to be not only some consequences, but some structure to their life. And for some people, juvie does actually serve that. For some kids, juvie will serve that. Oh, but Jason, once they get out, they're going to have a hard time. Yeah, that's true, maybe. Likely, even. But we can address that issue, right? Instead of pretending that what they did isn't serious. But again, that's the county we live in, the state we live in. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. Don't forget, every single Thursday, I do a Jason Rancho video update. It's available on all of our social media channels. It's brought to you by the Novak team, powered by Keller Williams. Visit them online at meetthenovaks.com. This time, on this video, episode number 7, we take you through the crisis, the hate crime, white supremacy hate crime that occurred in Buring, except it didn't. The mayor is not being honest about what happened. And I'll take you through the video evidence. Just go to our social media channels, facebook.com/Jason Rancho, twitter.com/Jason Rancho. It's all there. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show on KTTH. Right now, public testimony is wrapping up. It's been underway for a few months as we await the final federal census data and begin negotiations around redistricting. And in the state of Washington, the redistricting process is a little bit different. Joining me on the line is one of the 4 appointed commissioners on the redistricting committee, Paul Graves. Welcome to the show. It's been a while.
It has been. Great to hear from you, Jason.
So if you could just remind people, give us a quick 101 refresher on what's going on.
Once a decade, the federal government conducts a census, and based on that, we redraw both our congressional boundaries and our state legislative boundaries.
And part of the reason you do that is to make sure that people are getting better representation. There are some areas that have grown. There are some that have shrunk. And we want to maintain some semblance of representation that gives them enough influence.
That's exactly right. If you just kept things the same, you'd have some districts that have twice as many people as other districts. That's not entirely fair. And even more than that, on the congressional level, there are 435 congressional districts across the country, and sometimes states gain seats or lose seats based on their population. We are going to stay at 10 seats here in Washington State, but in general, yeah, you have to rebalance once a decade.
And there are obviously political implications to all of this. The commissioners that are appointed, they are equal Republican and Democrat representation. So what does the process look like from here?
We have a great process here in Washington State. In a lot of states, the majority of states actually, the legislature itself draws congressional and legislative lines, and you can immediately see problems with that. You have partisanship injected into this process of redrawing boundaries. You have elected officials choosing their own voters rather than the other way around. But in Washington, we've chosen a different path. The people, through the initiative in 1983, adopted a process where 2 Republicans and 2 Democrats are appointed to a commission, and then you need 3 votes to approve a map. So it requires bipartisanship, and there's a requirement that none of us is currently in Congress or the legislature, and we can't run for Congress or the legislature for 2 years afterwards. So there's you make it bipartisan, and you reduce self-dealing, and ultimately we've ended up with maps that I think are a fair representation of Washington, and that most importantly let Washington voters turn their votes and their preferences into legislators who represent their wishes.
Where is the process right now?
We're slow and behind. We were supposed to get we use the official federal census data for all of our work. We were supposed to get it in the beginning of April, and we're not going to get it until the end of August. So we've been doing public hearings, public outreach, to hear from people across the state about how their current lines are working for them and about what their local communities of interest are, so that we can take those into account when we draw maps. But because we don't have the official data yet, we haven't even started our negotiating process, and we have until November 15th is our deadline to approve maps. So we'll get the data at the end of August, and then we'll have just a couple of months to negotiate in kind of a sprint toward that November 15th deadline.
What weight do you give to the folks who show up to these meetings? Because on the one hand, I could argue that the only people who even know about these meetings, despite the fact that, you know, we've talked about it certainly and promoted it, but the people who know about it are the ones who are kind of hyper-partisan and are looking to influence the process.
It's a good question. And you take it, I guess, with as much earnestness as people are willing to give it. You can. We've had 14 of these hearings so far, and we have an email too, where people can just send in emails about what they think about their local boundaries and their local community. And some people are just purely partisan, and they're just asking for partisan maps. And, you know, you kind of discount that accordingly. But we've actually heard from a good number of people who, at least from their testimony, don't really appear to be, you know, part of a partisan machine, mm-hmm. but kind of genuinely show up and say, hey, I live in this particular area, and it's kind of a weird part of this district, and I feel like I'm more part of the neighboring district, and we'd like to be there. And I think those ones can actually have some weight. But in general, we haven't heard from as many people as I would have guessed, which is a way of saying that if you care about this and you want to contribute either at our public hearings or through an email, your voice might have more of a say than you would otherwise think.
Totally. Especially, you know, I remember having this conversation with someone who was running in the 46th legislative district, which makes no sense at all the way that it's drawn, because it's got a huge chunk of Seattle, but then also you get Kenmore and Bothell, which means most likely that Seattle has all the influence. And if you live in Bothell or Lake Forest Park, you probably have very little. So how can people actually get involved, participate, and have their say?
We have a website that does a lot of the things that you want to do. It's redistricting.wa.gov. Again, redistricting.wa.gov. And there you can do a number of things. You can sign up to testify at one of our outreach meetings, where you they're all by Zoom so far, so you just show up and testify and give your 2 cents, especially if you're one of those people who live in like Lake Forest Park and think that you're being outnumbered by people in Seattle in your district. There's an email, again, comment@redistricting.wa.gov, where you can email in if you don't want to testify. And then we have a thing there where you can actually go and draw your own map. We have estimated population data, so it's not final, but with the estimated data, you can go on there and you can actually draw your own maps. It's easier to do than you'd think, and you can see what a challenge it is, because even if you want to redraw your own local district, it will then force you to draw the districts around you to be a little bit different to accommodate that, because at the end of the day, all the districts have to have equal population, and it's an interesting, challenging exercise, but once you do that, you can actually finalize those and then send them in. And we're actually receiving maps that people say, hey, I live in this area, and here's what I think a good map would look like. And again, there aren't as many people getting involved as you would think, so being involved right now will probably have outside influence.
So listen, folks, get involved. There are oftentimes folks on the left who show up to meetings in the middle of the day because they have the opportunities without having maybe a family or a job that they're taking care of the same way that you might be, and you're not able to actually get any sort of influence. Right now, Commissioner Graves is telling you, you have the opportunity to be really, really impactful in all of this. So go to redistricting.wa.gov, learn more about the process, and then actually participate. If you're looking for ways to get more involved, this is a way to do it. redistricting.wa.gov. Commissioner Paul Graves, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Got more coming up at the top of the hour.